So our trip down to Memphis and then on down to Columbus, Mississippi was interrupted. I shared with some of you on Wednesday night. We had a little mishap about 20 minutes outside of Nashville. We left here on Sunday 2 weeks ago now, and we're headed down, and we're getting outside of Nashville. It's getting dark, and hit a deer, of all places, 20 minutes outside of Nashville. Live around them all over the place. And I was telling Abby, you know, it just figures that this is the first time that she's come with me down to Memphis. I've driven down there years, taken trips, who knows how many hundreds and hundreds of miles, thousands of miles that I've traveled down back and forth to Memphis to take these classes and never taken Abby. And the first time that she comes with me, not only do we hit a deer and total the car, but we she gets to experience all of that, and then we're here, and we've never hit a deer in our entire life. So we hit this deer 20 minutes outside of Nashville, and airbags go off, you know, the whole bit, all 9 yards. And I've never been in a vehicle before to where the airbags have gone off, and I've always wondered, hey, what's that like? Not that I would ever want to, you know, try to figure it out. I took an airbag out of my car one time, and that was kind of scary. You know, you're always like, is it going to explode? But this time the airbags actually did deploy, and it is like the commercials. If you've ever seen a commercial, you know the they try to depict it. It's very accurate. That loud bang noise, and then everything kind of deafening, like muted sound, except for the ringing in your ears. It's like somebody fired a gun right beside your head in the middle of the car. And the smell, the smoke, the noise. First thought was, oh my goodness, that's a huge deer because of that sound. And then I realized it was just the airbags. It's actually a very small deer, fortunately. And this is the picture of the car, if you're wondering, as it was sitting there getting totaled by the insurance adjuster. It didn't look that bad to me. I didn't think it was all that terrible. But fortunately, we were able to drive off to the side of the road and started to try to figure out, you know, what to do next. Abby was upset, obviously. You know, when you get in an accident, the airbags deploy, the seatbelts all of a sudden lock. And so her stomach was pretty pressed against that seatbelt, and it was painful, and she was trying to get it off and crying, and Hannah was asleep the whole time. It was so funny. We were first concerned about her. She was asleep. She didn't wake up until she heard Mommy crying, and then that made her cry. And so, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to get the smoke out of the car, call the ambulance, and try to figure this all out. Ambulance came, and guys were great, and they took us to the hospital. Just to get observed. Everybody's fine. But, you know, the guy said, he's like, you did the right thing. You didn't swerve. He said, I've seen so many of these accidents where people try to swerve to avoid the deer and they make it worse. Well, I didn't tell him this, but I actually didn't have time to think. I just plowed right into the deer and just kept on going. So so we're sitting there and trying to figure this all out. And I'll come back to that story in a second. But you know, one of the things about marriage, if those of you who are married, and if you're not married, maybe you've seriously dated someone before and you can kind of relate to this. One of the beautiful things about the marriage relationship is that it exposes all of your weak areas. And I remember what it was like before meeting Abby, before dating and getting serious with Abby. You know, I probably was a little bit arrogant about myself. I probably thought I had it all together. And, you know, your blind spots are your blind spots, and you just don't know that they're there because they're blind spots. And so you go into this relationship, and you think, yeah, I'm going to be this great husband, or I'm going to be this great wife, and we're going to get together, and we're going to have a great life together. And then you get a couple years in, and you're like, holy cow, I've got some issues. You know, I've got a temper. Or, man, I can't stop picking. Like, I'm a control freak, or I'm a OCD, or I'm, you know, whatever it may be, or I'm too loose. I just don't even care about my schedule, and that upsets my husband or my wife. And so the beautiful thing about Abby and I's relationship is that it's been a chiseling of both of us, probably more so me than her, knocking off the rough areas. And one of these rough areas of my life that she's graciously worked on through the years is this area of control. Anybody have a need to control? Anybody have that that controlling nature, try to manage things and want to make things, everything perfect and try to know and to do and to figure it out and to plan. And then at times you step over the boundaries and start manipulating a little bit. And so that's been kind of our story of marriage, is me trying to figure out what, you know, back off a little bit, and I'm still working on that. And you know, the funny part about those rough patches of your life, those rough areas, is that they often crop up under periods of stress and high tension moments. They kind of pop back up again. And it happened. Sitting in the car, my first thought was, I should have missed that deer. I could have swerved. I could have gone around him. I could have braked if I'd seen him. And, you know, natural to think that way. My second thought was, I can still drive this car. No damage, you know. You saw it. It drives straight. It doesn't leak. It's, you know, just missing a headlight. The EMTs thought I was nuts. So I zip-tied the bumper up and went on our way. We did get a rental eventually. But I drove it to the hospital, and I'm thinking, I can still make it to Memphis. We'll be a couple hours. You know, decided to take Abby away and hand it to the hospital, and I followed. And I'm thinking, you know, just a couple hours, just checked out, monitored. They'll find out everything's fine. We'll still make it to Memphis. It'll be a late night, but we'll still make it to Memphis. Nope. Nurse came in. You're staying the night. Great. You know how fun it is to stay a night in the hospital with a 2-year-old and an incapacitated wife in a hospital bed? Yeah, not very fun. Fortunately, they let us have the pack and play there, and I kind of, you know, that's the, right now she's still unable to get out of the pack and play, so we just kind of put her in the pack and play, and she's controlled for a little bit. But so I'm still thinking in my mind, I'm going to make it to Memphis. Okay, well, maybe not tonight, maybe tomorrow morning we'll get up, you know, they'll let us out early and we can get on our way, and I'll be there by lunchtime. Nope. All day long we stayed in this hospital room, all day long. Literally all day long. Till about dinner time, they wanted to observe Abby to make sure everything was okay. And this is, I guess, protocol for them to do that for a pregnant woman after an accident. And so I'm increasingly becoming more frustrated. You can guess. If you're not a control freak, you may have no idea like why it would be a problem. But for me, it was a problem. I'm trying to figure this out, and I can't figure this out. And it didn't become apparent to me until that evening when we finally got out of the hospital. We're on our way down the road. We stopped for dinner. And have you ever had a moment in your life where you are suddenly very self-aware of what you're doing and why you're doing it? And it may make no sense to anybody else. They may not even notice what's going on, but you know exactly why you did what you just did. And it makes you feel a little sick. Why you just did it. So we're sitting there at the dinner table, and we've ordered our food, and we're getting our food, and the waiter's coming around giving us plates of food, and he comes to me, and he's kind of coming around me, and all of a sudden, I can't tell you, it was like an out-of-body experience or something like this. It just happened. I don't know how it happened, why it happened, but I just turned around, took a plate out of his arms, and put it in front of me. And he's probably like, boy, this guy's hungry. But I knew exactly why. Because I had 24 hours where I couldn't do anything that I wanted to do. And now, I could. I could bring this plate in faster and he could deliver it. So I'm going to set it down, boy. And he probably didn't, like, he probably went on his way, didn't think anything about it. Just probably that he needed to check back at that table here and make sure he's not, like, you know, done his plate in 5 minutes. But I suddenly felt sick to my stomach because I knew my urge to control was starting to take over. And so we finished up, got back on the road, headed to Memphis, and all this is going through my head. I'm starting to think about all the things that have happened and putting together, you know, little bits and pieces of information. And all of a sudden, this passage pops in my mind, James 4:13-16. And I can't tell you why. I don't know why, because I've heard this passage for, you know, my whole life almost. And we're going to read it again in just a second. And when we read it, I want you to think about something a little bit differently than maybe you're used to reading it. Because the way I'm used to reading it, maybe like you, I read it with the idea that the wording is talking about somebody who's a little bit arrogant, a little bit presumptuous about their plans and their big dreams and what they're going to do with their farm or their business or their activity for the next day and how they don't know that tomorrow they could be gone. And so I've always looked at it through the lens of presumption, through the lens of boasting, through the lens of arrogance, but I want to read it again with you and read it through the lens of control. Read it through the mindset of myself as I'm driving down the road between Memphis and Nashville. Verse 13 says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. And yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil." This need to control, this idea that I am the captain of my own ship, I am the captain and the master of my destiny, that I get to manage my life and leverage my resources and my wealth and my opportunities in such a way to my advantage. And if you read the entire surrounding passage, you get the idea as James is about to go into chapter 5 and he's starting to talk about warnings to the rich. And he'll say some warnings, some things, some words of caution to the rich here in just a few verses that a lot of people actually think that it ties back to what we've just read in chapter 4. The chapter 4 at the end really is a part of chapter 5 and the warnings to the rich. That it's probably likely that these people that James is talking to are those that are a little more wealthy, they're a little bit better off, able to use their resources and leverage things to their advantage and control their life and their situation and their future and their opportunities. And God says, "You fool. You have no control. You don't have control over tomorrow. Instead, you should say, if the Lord wills, we'll do this. Because you can't control it." So I'm running down the road and this passage is going through my mind and I'm thinking about all this that I'm sharing with you, and then another passage pops in my head and it's in Proverbs. And Proverbs is a lot like James. Proverbs and James are what we might call wisdom literature. It's short, pithy statements, very easy, simplistic, straightforward, black and white, kind of just tell it like it is. And Proverbs is a lot like James, and so there's this verse in Proverbs that I've actually used throughout my entire life as I struggle with this control thing. And it's a verse that's always meant a lot to me, and so it might have been that's why it popped in my head, but it's Proverbs 19:21. And Proverbs 19:21 is one of about three passages in the book of Proverbs where the writer talks about the same thing. He essentially says the same thing in these other passages, this different ways, but the same message. And the first half of Proverbs 19:21 says, "Many are the plans in the mind of man." Many are the plans in the mind of man. If you stop me in any given day, on any given moment, and you kind of got in Scott's brain and figured out what's in Scott's head right now, what's going through his mind, you'd find that there's a list, a fairly long list. A fairly unrealistic list of what I'm going to accomplish today. And I always think that I have more time to accomplish it than I really do. And I'm optimistic about accomplishing more of it than I really am able to accomplish. And I tend to be a task-oriented person. Abby and I are different in that way. Abby's the people person. I'm the task-oriented person. So if I like miss something sometimes that you say to me, and I'm like focused on something like that I'm going to do next or places that I'm going to get, it's not intentional. I promise you. Somebody told me one time, "You walk too fast through the store," and I thought, "Gee, I guess I do." If you ever see me walking through Respects, I walk pretty quickly because I know what I want. I know where it is, or I'm trying to figure out where it is. And I'm getting it and I'm going. I'm a task. So I have this list in my head. Maybe some of you can relate. And there's this like background that's always playing. And I could be having a conversation with somebody and that background is still playing in my head. That list is going through my mind. Many are the plans in the mind of man. But the second half of that verse is really the kicker. Because after that, the writer says, but the purpose of the Lord will stand. You and I think we've got it figured out. You know, the statement is, tell God your plans and let Him laugh at them, right? Something to that effect. Because we often make a list, we make plans, we think we have it all figured out, we think we're to control our lives to the point that we are managing and the captain of our own destiny, and yet we fail to recognize that there is a supreme God who has all things in His hands. And at any given moment, our plans can change. And it's the Lord's purpose that will ultimately stand. And so this morning, I want to ask you a question. In your life right now, Sunday, June 24th. Yeah, not January. 2018. What are you trying to control? What are you trying to control? And maybe this doesn't mean anything to you. Maybe you're one of those wonderful people that just seems to take life as it comes, and you could care less what happens next. But I think for the most of us, to some degree or another, we probably want to have some resemblance of control. We want to know what's going to happen next. And we try to control. We try to control our jobs. If you're a manager, you control people. If you're not a manager, you try to get out of the control of someone. And you use people, resources, opportunities, and try to control them. Maybe it's to get another job. Maybe it's to get the next step up in the corporate ladder or whatever you're climbing, whatever ladder you're on. To get the promotion, to get the next thing, and you're thinking, okay, whose shoulder do I need to rub, or what kinds of relationships do I need to make, or what kinds of comments do I need to say in this conversation? We try to control our job. Maybe it's a spouse. Try to control our husband or our wife. We think that they're just kind of clueless. They'd be better off if they just let us manage them a little bit more. And then, all of a sudden, they start to push back a little bit, get resentful, get bitter, get upset and angry and frustrated because they know, they're not dumb, they know what's going on, and nobody likes to be controlled, right? And so you push a little bit harder, and they push a little bit harder, and all of a sudden you're at odds and you're butting heads and you can't figure out what's going on. All the time, in the back of your mind, you're just like, give me this control. If you just let me manage this more, if you just let me have a little bit more say, if you just let me do this, our marriage would be better, our life would be better. All the time, it's about this control. Or maybe it's your children. And this is the tricky part, because in some degree, we do need and have the responsibility to control our children, right? They're given to us to form, to shape, to mold, to give them an example of Christ, to train them up in righteousness and godliness. But yet we also know that at some point they do have the ability, the capacity to make their own decisions. They become adults at some point and they need to be able to have independence. And so maybe it's a time in their life where you need to take a step back and start releasing some of that control, but you actually find that you're stepping in into their life and you're managing more and you're hovering over them more, and they're getting frustrated at that because they want some independence, they want some choice, they want some freedom to be able to make their own decisions. And they start to rebel and you start to butt heads and you're like, why is this happening? And that's not to say that all parent-child relationships are the result of difficulties or the result of need to control, but sometimes they are. What are you trying to control? You know, I could go on and on. We could talk more and more about specific examples of your life and where that might be a fit and applied. But you know what happens when we try to control, right? ultimately it fails because we can't control things. And then sometimes we even look dumb. Because at some point, if you do this often enough and most visibly, somebody's going to call you out on it. Somebody's going to figure it out. People are not dumb. And all of a sudden, you start looking like a fool because you're trying to control something that you can't control and everybody knows it. Think about the story of Abraham. Remember Abraham, Sarah? God had told them, hey, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to make you father of many nations. I'm going to bless you with a son. And then the son didn't come. And they waited and they waited and they waited. And finally, after waiting enough time, they figured, I'm going to take care of this. We're going to take care of this ourselves. And so Sarah gave Abraham her handmaiden Hagar. And they had a child together, Ishmael. A child that was never supposed to be in the picture at all. And eventually, the consequences of that decision start to manifest themselves when Isaac comes along. Isaac, Abraham and Sarah's child, who is the promised son, the one that God told them, you're going to have a son. And when they grow up together, Isaac and Ishmael start butting heads and they can't get along. Hagar's making fun of Sarah. And Abraham has to kick him out of the house. Leave. Go away. So he sends Hagar and Ishmael out into the desert essentially to die. God takes care of Hagar and Ishmael, and Ishmael becomes the father of a great nation as well. The Arab people. And you know how well the Arabs and the Israelites, Jews get together, don't you? All because of one man's decision to control. I'll tell you one story and we'll be done. When we first came to Woodsfield from Marysville, actually before we even got here, one of the first people we met was Randy Williams. And it was an odd thing because Randy and I had never met. I had gone to school with Travis, known him for years at that point. But in college, you just don't meet parents, right? It's not like high school where you get to know the parents. And so I'd never known Randy and Emma. I'd known Travis. And it was a couple weeks after we'd made the announcement that we were going to leave and come to Woodsfield at Marysville. And we still had to take the teens on a youth group trip. We were in Belpre for the youth rally and Randy and Emma had come down. And Randy kind of found me out in the crowd and he put his arm around me and introduced himself. Said, I'm Randy Williams, I'm Travis's dad and want to let you know how excited we are that you're coming. And want to let you know if you need anything, you just let us know. And you could tell he meant it. Randy and Emma's house was one of the first houses that we ate lunch at when we came to Woodsfield. And I had known about Randy's cancer diagnosis before we came. And, you know, as we got to know Randy and Emma a little bit, and I'm trying to keep up with things that are going on, I'm asking Randy the questions that everybody asks, you know, how's your scan go, and what's your treatment going like, and how are you feeling, and all this stuff, and my go-to, again, control, I want to know, how can we manage this? What are the outcomes going to be? And what's the likelihood of this thing working out? And what's the chances? And at times I would ask these questions of Randy, and I think he knew where I was going in my mind, because he'd stop me. Say, it's okay. It's a win-win. He'd say that, right? It's a win-win. If I don't make it, I get to be with Jesus. If I stay, I get to be with Emma, my grandkids, all of that. Of course, the only concern he had about leaving was Emma and the family. But other than that, he was good. He was fine. He made his peace with it. And you know, as we stood here months after that, years after his diagnosis and had the funeral, for those of you who were there, you remember that was a constant theme throughout the funeral service, was the fact that Randy had come to terms with the end. And to this day, Randy remains one of the only people that I've ever known to die with such dignity. To have made his peace with it so well. And I think the reason that he did was because Randy knew that at the end of the day, he had no control over this. That if he was going to die, he needed to be able to die well and to give it up and to let God take care of himself and his family and release control. I've watched a lot of people. I shouldn't say a lot. I'm not that old yet. I've watched many people die in ministry. That's just kind of what you do, unfortunately, as a part of your job. You watch people die. Not everybody dies well. Sad to say. Even Christians. Some Christians struggle. And it's natural. There's a fear of death. We don't know what's on the other side. We know, but we don't know. But I'll tell you what. Those that die well have let go of the control. Maybe that they realize they never had in the first place. And for you and I, sure as we're standing here today, someday we're going to be up front in a casket sometime, and somebody's going to be saying some things at our funeral. Are you willing to recognize that fact? That you have no control. Whatever semblance of control you think you might have in a situation, you really don't. And at the end of the day, it's up to God to decide. And how we deal with life, ultimately, in a large way, is dependent on how we recognize that God is the great provider. And He gives to His children what they need. And He provides for them and has control over their lives. And so this morning, I ask you again as we close, what are you trying to control? What are you trying to control? We'll have a song here in a minute, and you can respond in any way as you feel like maybe God's working on your heart, wherever you are in your life right now. Or if you need prayers, we'd be happy to pray with you in any way. And of course, if today would be the day that you decide to give away control to the God of the universe, knowing that at the end of the day, you are His, you're a creation of His, and He's worked to redeem you through the blood of His Son, Jesus Christ, from sin and your own struggles, we'd be happy to help you come to a saving knowledge of Jesus and baptize you this morning. So if you would do any of those things, come as we stand and sing this song.